Time now for another Future Sox podcast. I'm your host, Clinton Cole. And this week's edition of the Future Sox podcast has four special interviews. I was down in Kannapolis last week, talked to three of the players, Tate Blackman, Tyler Johnson, and Blake Battenfield. And then, just today, this is May 10th, I just got done talking with White Sox play-by-play announcer Jason Benetti. So those four interviews are your Future Sox podcast for this week. Hope you enjoy them all, so let's get it started. First off, here is myself and Tyler Johnson.
Clinton Cole, Tyler Johnson, was this May 2nd? Yeah, down here in Kannapolis. Before we got this going, Tyler, we talked about, you know, you're obviously a reliever here. You said you made one start. How'd that go for you?
Well, it was in the regionals in an elimination game for South Carolina. And I closed out the game before, and they asked if I had, or the day before, and asked if I had some innings left for the next day.
Some innings.
And I ended up going 9 and gave up, like, I guess it was about 3 hits and 1 run. So it was nice.
Yeah, not bad. Not a bad college program at South Carolina either. What, back to back? When was that?
Yeah, it was
11 and 12? 10 and 11?
Yeah,
what was that?
10 and 11. 10 and 11. And then they lost in 12.
Right, and they lost in 12. So what was it like being in that program?
You know, it was a blessing. It was a blessing that I was even there in the first place. And, you know, I owe it a lot to that program, especially to my coaches and strength coach to get me in a position to play minor league baseball because I was allowed to develop there and as well as win some ball games. And you just can't beat baseball at University of South Carolina. So, you know, I'm really fortunate to have been there.
All right, so this first month here in Kannapolis, your ERA is like 1.75, 7.4, something like that. You're seeing guys that, you know, the same age, same level, and everything like that. So what is working for you? What's giving you that advantage? What's right for you right now?
Really, I'm just trying. I was pretty naive last year. Kind of try to take my college style of pitching, get guys to chase, but you know, hitters a lot more disciplined at this level. So try to drop down and kind of spot up early in a count and then get them to chase late is where you can get them in trouble. Also, I've worked on developing a slider and a changeup, and I've recently been able to throw all three pitches for a strike. So it's really just getting in my count, and then I have room to play with them.
So I talked to Tate and Blake here just a few seconds ago. What's something, I mean, like all the other guys, you're all part of teams forever. I mean, you know, some people play, get started later, but for the most part, you guys have been playing for a while. What's something about this team for you that you like coming here and being a part of every day?
You know, it's just like we're a bunch of 22-year-old kids, and you kind of try to recreate that. When you were little, we were talking about the other day, you come to a ballpark, you play 4 games, and you don't think twice about it, you don't get sore, and then you play 3 more the next day. So you're doing this since you're a little kid, and you just try to have as much fun as you can. Tate said that we're a fun group, and I agree with him. We definitely like each other a lot, and you know, it makes it a little bit easier to come to the park, and that on top of winning some games, you know, it's just it's a good time.
A couple more questions for you and I'll let you go. So, you know, you've got coaches, everything has coaches, obviously you learn from your coaches, but what do you guys learn from each other? Like, what do you take from each other?
Well, baseball's got a lot of feel in it, so you talk to other pitchers, especially in my case, to pick up different pieces of their mechanics and try to put them with yours, or their pitches, try to put it with yours, and you make a big mesh of it, what works for you, and then you take something that doesn't, and you just try things over and over again. So you just try to learn from each other, and you just do that by taking bits and pieces from what others have experienced, and you try to make it into a whole new monster.
Last thing, favorite baseball memory. I mean, you can go with the 9 innings thing, but give me something else.
I would say favorite baseball memory was definitely playing in a super regional at South Carolina. We ended up losing, but we were able to play at home, and it was just an atmosphere that I've never been a part of before. But just getting that far and being one of the elite left in the country was a special feeling, and a feeling that South Carolina has been a part of for a long time. So it was good to be part of that.
All right, thanks, man.
I appreciate it.
Clinton Cole here with Blake Battenfield. Blake, we're down here in Kannapolis. You know, all the hype this season in the White Sox organization, you know, third-ranked prospect or third-ranked organization in baseball, you're not on that top 30. I don't know how you guys, I mean, we're all human. We all look at stuff. Did you look at that and is it a little chip on your shoulder to perform better, or is you just go out there and do what you do every day?
I don't know about upset about top 30 stuff. I mean, you try not to keep an eye on anything media like that. But I think for the group of guys here, I think we all push each other because we've all been pitching at such a high level. Like, you just want to keep that up and make sure that you're keeping pace with everybody else. It's a great organization to be a part of because we have so many top prospects that you know that if you don't perform at a high level every single day, then you're going to get, you know, moved over.
So you went to Oklahoma State, pretty good baseball program there. So what was that like?
That was a great experience. I had one of the best coaching staffs in the country and one of the best places to be in the country. I love Stillwater, Oklahoma. It was a dream to go there. I learned a lot over my time there with our pitching coach, Rob Walton. Taught me a lot about, you know, pitching and, you know, not only that, just being a man and how to handle your day-to-day life. So I wouldn't trade that for the world.
You've been one of the better surprises here in the White Sox organization this first month. I know it's 1 month, you know, you just a couple starts, but that ERA under 2.5, I know that's where you want it to be. What do you have to do to continue on what you're doing?
I just continue with the process and continue my routine. You know, I did a little bit of everything in college. I was a closer, I was a reliever, starter. I've got a lot of experience under my belt, so I just got to, right now, this is my first full season of starting, so I'm going to, you know, try to work through some of the kinks and try to figure out what works best for me. I'm still experimenting with some things, but right now, what I think I've got going on is working well, so hopefully I can build on it.
So what's something that you're working on? You know, you're trying to do what you've been doing, but is there one thing in particular you want to work on that next start?
My last start, you know, I was able to go mainly with my fastball changeup. My breaking balls weren't very effective, which, you know, if you'd asked me to throw just fastball changeups a year ago at this point, it would have been a quick, you know, two innings and out. But I went to Instructs this past fall and was able to really work on my changeup in spring training. That was a big focus of mine. So I was really glad that in the past I've had to lean on my breaking balls, and now that I'm able to use my changeup and my fastball and pitch off those two pitches and get six innings, it was a good thing to, you know, experience. And now hopefully if I have all four with me, I can expand and even be better.
Last thing I've been asking, you know, I asked Charlie Tilson this the other night in Charlotte. Last thing I'm closing with is, what's your favorite baseball memory?
Oh, favorite baseball memory? Probably playing in Omaha. That's an experience I wouldn't trade for anything. I got to pitch, I think it was one inning or two innings in Omaha, but it was just an unbelievable atmosphere, unbelievable experience, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
All right, man, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, Clinton Cole here with Tate Blackman. Tate, you're down here in Kannapolis, you went to Ole Miss. You're used to this hotter weather, but, you know, first warm day of the year, what do you guys do a little differently?
Nothing much. I mean, just get your body ready, going. Obviously, you got to hydrate. You know, don't want to cramp up and have to get pulled out of the game for a little cramp. You know, just, you know, making sure your body's in the right condition to, you know, be able to play a long season and play the, you know, full nine innings.
Hitting .315 this year. You know, what's going right at the plate for you? You're seeing the ball well, obviously. You're putting it in play and stuff, but what's going right for you?
Just trying to have a good plan at the plate. Being aggressive to the fastball, really trying to do damage with the fastball when I get in early counts. Allows me to, you know, recognize off speed a little bit better. So when I gear up for a fastball, my instincts kind of take over, and I have a tendency to spit on, you know, better changeups or, you know, good sliders, then swinging over them.
It's first month of the season here. Like I said, you've been playing well. Do you take more pride? I mean, you take pride in both defense and offense, but what do you like better, so to speak?
I obviously like hitting because that's what I grew up hitting, and I've always hit through a lot of things. But I put a lot of work this offseason on my defense because I had a lot of holes in my defense, and, you know, people talk about moving me to catcher because my defense wasn't there. So seeing all the work I put in this offseason is really – truly a gift and a blessing, you know, that it's happening on the field as well. You know, reading good hops, not being lazy with my feet. So just putting my body in a good position to feel the correct hop and the easier hop to get is, you know, kind of a pretty neat feeling, which I never had that feeling. You know, I would always, you know, be in between on the hops, but now getting the smoother reps on which hop to take is pretty cool from, you know, what I've used to have done in the past.
So you've been playing baseball your whole life, you know, all of you guys have. You've been part of teams, many different teams. So what's something special about this team?
Just a close group of guys. I mean, we joke around in the locker room. We hang out with each other outside of the field. You know, when we're going to go eat, you know, it's not just two of us. It's more eight of us or 10 of us. So that chemistry, it goes a long way. I mean, you know, people are going to get moved up and down. But the sooner you build a relationship with one another, you're going to want to win for that guy. You know, you're going to make plays behind the pitchers. You're going to want to drive in those runs for your team and for the coaches. So when you build more chemistry with these guys, which we've been doing, it's fun coming to the field every day. You know, it's our job, and if we can just make this game as fun as we can, then good things are going to go its way.
You know, people, you know, fans that may not have, you know, may have played in high school, whatever. What that was? yeah, that was far. They don't realize what it takes to be a team. You know, I only made it through college. I didn't make it into the minors, whatever. But being with you guys, or being with the same guys every single day, if you guys don't like each other, that's going to be an issue.
No, yeah, it's going to be an issue. I mean, luckily we have none of those guys where we hate on the team.
Right.
It's all good fun, chemistry, and, you know, just good vibes. And that's, you know, something we like having, you know, good music playing before the games, you know, playing cards, you know, just joking around the locker room, being, you know, and we're all in the 20s, well, most of us. Right. So just trying to find the way to step back and be a kid again and just enjoy each other and just love being around each other. Because, I mean, you're with these guys day in and day out from spring training till, you know, the beginning of September, middle of September, you know, playoffs goes. So you're around them every day, and, you know, people can get under your skin. But as long as you're having fun with them and enjoying what they do and just being around them is it's a pretty neat thing to just, you know, have a lot of fun with these guys.
Last thing, favorite baseball memory thus far?
Favorite memory this far? I would say, you know, my back-to-back home runs, you know, the first game and the second game, that was, you know, to get off on a good start was really what I was trying to do, because last year in Great Falls I had a really slow first half. So just being able to come out of the gates hot, you know, swinging it well, it's, you know, it's a truly gift, and, you know, I'm very thankful for, you know, those two games to go the way they did, because it made the pressure go down tremendously, and now it's just about having fun now and, you know, winning baseball games.
All right, man, thanks.
Thank you.
Joining me now on Skype, a very special guest, taking time on his day off from the daily grind in Major League Baseball, White Sox play-by-play announcer, Jason Benetti. Jason, thanks for your time, man.
Oh, glad to.
So you were down in Winston-Salem a couple weeks ago, and it was funny because, well, it's not funny for you, because it was the day after that nearly, six-hour game in Oakland, I believe, and you got on a flight and you were in North Carolina that next day. And a long day for you, but we got to meet in Winston-Salem. Before we get into everything else, was that game in Oakland the longest game time-wise that you've been a part of?
Was it the longest game time-wise that I've been a part of? I think so. I'm trying to think back to if there have been any games in AAA that rival it, and I don't think so. So, no, I wouldn't say I've been involved in any longer games time-wise. 548 is pretty decent for 14 innings. It was an interesting day. But, you know, honestly, Steve and I were actually talking about this the other day. That didn't feel like 548, which is interesting to say because, you know, it's only 2 hours plus away from the record. But it didn't feel like that, even though it by time lagged. It's funny how some games are like that. The game against the Pirates the other day that went 353 or whatever it was, I could have sworn that was 6 hours and 32 minutes.
It's amazing how that works. Yeah, sometimes I know that your game, I believe, started, I was going to another game, and that game almost finished before that one, and that one started at 7 or something like that. It was just a crazy day. Let's talk about the White Sox first before we get to the minor league teams. no secret, nine wins this season, I believe, just three at home. What are your thoughts this season and on the White Sox as a whole?
Yeah, that loss, especially the most recent loss, giving the Pirates that game, is one of the games where you in a regular season would say, oh man, you know, that one's unacceptable. And I think that is where this season and regular seasons kind of converge, because I agree, like that game you don't want to lose in a lot of ways. If it were not on a heap of other losses, I don't think the reaction would have been what it was. I've had some Sox fans come up to me just in the last, you know, 12 hours and say, oh, that was a really tough loss. I agree. But again, when you sign up for a rebuild, you're going to have losses like that too. And it just so happens that the losses have been not of that flavor so far this year. So it's really hard for me to overreact to any one loss. And maybe I underreact. Maybe people will say that. But it's one loss in a season. And if this team were even, say, 15-19, you'd say that one stings, but remember all these other wins. So I just tend to think the reaction people are having viscerally to that loss is worse because of the things that preceded it. That said, still a bad loss and still one you'd want back. And I know Nate Jones feels that way too.
Reynaldo Lopez, one of the key parts of this White Sox rebuild, off to a great start. I mean, he's had 5 quality starts and what is this, May 10th, and he's been far and away, I think, maybe probably the brightest spot so far this season.
I would agree with you in terms of the pitching staff,
yeah,
for sure. Yeah, his stuff, it's clear. Like, there has not been one game this year where you've said, oh, the stuff's not very good. The stuff's always there, which is a very nice thing to see, and that suggests front of the rotation type of positioning at a later time. There was the one game where the Royals jumped on him a couple weeks ago for the 10 hits, but they just didn't let him get to deep counts, which has been the issue before. So I think as we see his arc this season, we'll see more improvements. And, you know, a 2.44, whatever it is, ERA right now as we stand is really strong. And it is too bad that he doesn't get the recognition that maybe he deserves so far because of the win total, but the stuff is there. I mean, he is an absolute bright spot.
White Sox play-by-play announcer Jason Benetti joining me here on the Future Sox podcast. Jason, another pitcher that's a big part of this rebuild, another couple of them, Carson Fulmer, Lucas Giolito. What do you see from those two guys this season? Not off, obviously, to as great of a start as Lopez.
No, it's been uneven. And I think that's what you also get the invoice for when there's a rebuild.
Right.
But I know that can be incredibly frustrating for people to watch. And it's incredibly frustrating for Lucas. I mean, if you saw his demeanor that game against Houston on the mound, he looked lost. And then he comes out against St. Louis and was as fluid and as in rhythm as any pitcher. And even talking to him after that St. Louis game, I mentioned this on the air, but he gave up the home run to Martinez, the pitcher, and he let who hit that home run affect him. Down the road, that will be the lesser of all of the evils for him. That won't be as much of a worry for Lucas later on. That's youth in some regard, but it's also incredibly frustrating for the player, and I know for fans, to not know what you're going to get out of somebody on a day-to-day basis. But that really what we're seeing is growing pains. And then Carson Fulmer has a 7-inning start where he looks just truly fantastic. And then he has the start during the homestand against Minnesota when the Twins put a pretty good hurting on him. And, you know, you say, well, which one is he? And the answer right now is both.
And that's, I think for White Sox fans, as you mentioned, frustrating because we see these guys that are Lucas coming over in the trade and then Fulmer, a first round pick. You think you want those instant results and the growing pains,
yeah,
and the time. Yeah.
I think the thing that you have to remember if you choose to on that day, and I get it, right? Like I get the pain people are feeling when the loss column gets added to. But if you're seeing things that you say, in a couple years, I will also be saying, gee, I'm glad we had that rocky season so all these guys could figure some things out. I think then that's where the payment comes in. So there's no way to look this thing 2 years down the road or even a year down the road and say, where are we going to be? But I do think there's a calming feeling simply for me in knowing that nothing this year other than the injuries has gone outside of the plan. And injuries are also going to be a part of it. You just wish they wouldn't happen to, say, Moncada or Jake Berger again. But injuries, that's why you have depth in the farm system, is for injury insurance as well. So I think, I really do think truth serum applied, Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams, everybody would say, this is going like we wanted it to, with some small exceptions. Not in terms of win-loss. Not in terms of win-loss, because I know it's frustrating for those guys too, but in terms of progress.
I could ask you a thousand more questions about the White Sox, but maybe we'll get some more time later this season. But let's get to the minor league squad or the minor league teams. We'll start with the two biggest names, Eloy Jimenez and Michael Kopech. Kopech coming off a just a couple innings and I believe 66 pitches against Columbus on May 6th. He's scheduled to go tomorrow. And then Jimenez has just been on a tear. Kopech, he's not been, I don't think, what people think Kopech is supposed to be. Now, that's not probably not fair to him, but that name, you think Kopech, you're thinking he's striking out 15 guys a game and, you know, all sorts of things like that. So we'll start with Kopech. What have you been able to see out of him? I've talked to him a couple times after starts in Charlotte, but what have you seen with what he's done in his six starts this season?
Yeah, we've talked to him as well, and it seems as though the secondary stuff's getting better. But talking to both him and Steve McCaddy and listening to what Rick Hahn said before the game yesterday, part of what they're doing with Michael is hammering out what his reaction should be to each start. That's the mental portion of the game, and I know there's been a lot of discussion of Super 2 and should he even be in the minors and all of that, and I don't mean to disregard it, but going down that path is, first of all, above my pay grade. And second of all, you and I are not going to get anywhere in that conversation because we're not the ones deciding when he was going to come up anyway. So we might as well talk about the player. And it seems as though that part of what we're discussing with Michael Kopech is where his mind is at after he gives up some runs, or after the changeup doesn't work as well as it should, or after a great success, then where is he? It's about leveling that all out and getting the mental sandpaper out, at least reading between the lines on both him and McCaddy and Rick Hahn, and some of it explicitly. So I think part of where we stand on Kopech is that. And I think I come from a fairly unique perspective on AAA superstar pitcher, because I had Steven Strasburg in AAA in both 2010 and 2011. And Strasburg was at points unhittable, but there were moments where he gave up some runs, not many. He had a 108, as I looked at it earlier, in 2010 and six starts in AAA. So, I mean, he was virtually unhittable. And he was still working on what his demeanor was going to be like. There was a lot of, hey, how do you handle the media? That sort of thing with Strasburg. So I do think there is something to Michael Kopech being in AAA.
I will say that Kopech, I mean, after his, let's see, when was I down there? I think it was May 1st, his start against Gwinnett when Jose Bautista was there. He pitched six innings and he gave up three earned runs. And, you know, he was in line for a win, and I don't, you know, wins don't really matter. But then in that game, Bautista hit a two-run home run in the top of the ninth, and, you know, he didn't get the win. You know, things like that, little things like that, you know, that could be depressing for a young kid or whatever. We talked to him after the game, and he mentioned that, you know, things may not have gone the way he wanted them to and this and that, but it seemed like he wasn't, you know, he wasn't pouting. You know what I mean? Very easy for a kid that's, you know, 22 years old to get down on some things. And he did mention the changeup was progressing and how to react after, you know, if you're getting hit around a little bit. And it just seems like he has progressed in those terms.
I think so. I agree. I mean, he was talking about it when we had him on the phone very briefly when the Sox were in Toronto earlier this year, that part of it is dealing with hitters and their mentality on him and all of that. And, you know, so far this year in the International League, I believe he's not faced a repeat opponent yet. And I think that changes things too. When somebody sees him twice, how are they handling him? How is he handling them? What's the scouting report on these guys? So there's a lot there to unpack. I understand people want to see him. It's the question I get fairly to most often. When's he coming? I don't know. But I do know that there's a lot of talent in there, and you want him to be as ready as possible for when he gets to the bigs.
There are, you know, when you're rated the third best farm system by MLB Pipeline, you can, you know, there's obviously a ton of different guys on there that you can talk about. We're just going to talk about the top names right now. And I mean, like I said, we could be here all day. Moving on to Eloy Jimenez.
Yeah, to be clear too, like, I want to see Michael Kopech pitch.
Oh yeah. Like, who doesn't?
I want to see him in the big leagues,
yeah.
But I also want the best version of him too. And I think there's a contingent of people who, when you hear somebody say, well, they're trying to make them the best version, they think, well, he's just towing the company line. I've seen guys go to the majors from AAA and come back pretty quickly to AAA. And that is really hard on people. And I think if you can try to minimize that happening, the possibility of that happening, you really are putting the kid in the best position long term.
Last thing on Kopech, I guess. It's tough. You don't know when he's going to be there. And as you said, it's above our pay grade. But, I mean, do you think we see him in June? I mean, or is that something in September?
I really don't know. I mean, I think it depends. I don't think the Sox have a calendar in Rick Hahn or Kenny Williams' office that is totally blank except for the words Kopech on one day. I don't think that's what it is. However, I do know with that rolling off my tongue that somebody is going to like create that in Photoshop or something, but I really don't think that's going to happen.
Well, he's pitching tomorrow. Hopefully I get to go down and see him. And we'll see how he progresses. In terms of Eloy Jimenez, I mean, he missed the first couple weeks with the strained pec and then started the season 0-10. And since then, he might be the best hitter in all of the world. He has just been lights out, whether it's home runs, nine multi-hit games in a row or eight or whatever in that 13
nine,
game,
yeah.
Yeah, in that 13-game hitting streak. What does he need to do? What else does he need to do to get moved up to Charlotte and eventually to Chicago?
I would assume it's coming, right?
Right.
I mean, nine multi-hit games is a lot of multi-hit games. And unless there's some compelling reason, which to me would be something like everybody's being dopey and throwing him fastballs right down the middle or something like that.
Right.
But I don't have any reports of him only getting hits on a certain type of pitch. Now, I'll investigate further to make sure I'm not missing anything on that. But that's something AAA pitching, I think, would change for him when he gets there, is you have more veteran pitchers, guys who, when they sense a weakness, they will pepper the zone or out of the zone there. So that's what I'm excited to see in AAA for him whenever that happens. But I also think he is just so advanced in thought, in his analytical mind, and how sharp he is about the game and where he sees himself going, that I think progress is more of a time situation for him to deal with a slump or two before he gets to Charlotte or the majors and see how he deals with that. But, he is unstoppable right now. It's really interesting.
Two of his teammates in Birmingham, Sebi Zavala and Zach Collins, the catchers. I talked to Zach when he was in Winston. I think it was maybe a year and a half ago or whenever that was. And I haven't talked to Sebi before. But, you know, as Sox fans, we think about it. We haven't had a catcher that, you know, seemed like we can depend on since A.J. Pierzynski. And now you've got two guys in the minors. I mean, you've got guys at other places, but I mean, the two biggest names that have been producing the most are these two guys, and they're at the same time. Do you see, is there a possibility that both of these guys are on the big league club in 2 years producing like this?
Yeah, why not, right? I mean, that's kind of the fun of right now, is there's projectability. Zach's OPS is above 900 now. Sebi's is 962 as I look at it right now. What's funny is we did a seminar at Sox Fest, and Rick Hahn was on the stage, and we opened it up to questions. And the first question was about Sebi Zavala. And I was like, what? What? How? Sox fans are really smart about the minors. This is amazing. I do think that's a possibility. I don't know what happens between now and then.
Right.
But I do think the premature demise of Zach Collins after a couple weeks this season was slightly entertaining, because we've seen it with guys before. When you have a command of the strike zone and there is some power in the bat, that usually ends up playing. And one of the tools, it seems to me, based on stories I've read and historical information, one of the things that really never goes away is command of the strike zone. That tends to port from level to level. And I think Zach Collins having that and also growing as a catcher is a sign that, yeah, I mean, maybe he will be here at some point sooner than some people thought earlier this year, which would have been never based on his first couple of weeks, based on what I was reading. So this is, goodness, the three words that I would like to say about this season are enjoy the ride, because some of the fun of a roller coaster is the fact that you just don't ever necessarily know how it's going to feel around the next turn, let's say. But that's not really fun if you don't want to be on the roller coaster. But if you decide to go on the roller coaster and you trust it, then you just enjoy where it's going. And that's the prism through which I see this season. I also don't like watching the team give up 3-run leads in the ninth. It's really like you can knock your own mind around in a season like this. But I think the anchor is there are so many great young players on the way that it's fun to watch them grow, and it's fun to project them out as well. And, you know, we all wish that even like 6 or 7 more wins were on the board right now. We absolutely do, because then you get a surprise like a Nicky Delmonico from last year. And that's a part of the rebuild too. So I think looking for that person as the season progresses is also really important.
You got time for 2 more questions?
Sure.
All right. Have you ever seen a minor league team with possibly as much talent on the pitching staff and the batting lineup as the Dash?
I have been calling the Dash the most interesting team in minor league baseball because they are. We had Omar on yesterday during the game, and I asked him how he decides who's in the outfield.
Right.
And he sounded pained, right? Like, he got too many. It's ridiculous. And they're all hitting 300.
It's incredible.
I don't know how you do it if you're him. And I think at some point, you know, if Jimenez goes up to AAA, then you've got an opening in AA. And I think then you break that up a little bit. But how do you decide who's it going to be? I mean, the first guy Omar Vizquel said to us was the most improved guy, which, you know, whatever flashes across your mind is going to be your answer to that sort of question. So it's not empirical. First guy you said was Joel Booker.
Right. I was just thinking that, yeah.
And we're talking about other dudes in that outfield that are dudes, according to prospect rankings.
Right.
So I think it's – and you know, you and I were both there on the same day. I talked to 4 guys there that said, it's such a fun clubhouse, and we're having a great time, and we've got a great manager. And it seemed like summer camp in Winston-Salem.
It's incredible. And the other thing with that outfield, Adolfo's not even playing the outfield, and Robert's not even there either. So it's crazy.
Yeah, I think we'll look back at the Winston-Salem Dash of 2018 and say, how did they not win the World Series?
I saw on Robert's Instagram, he does have that cast off, and he's been training. So I guess he's supposed to be back here in a couple weeks or so. And you know, for all of the buzz that's surrounding the Dash, I mean, Robert's the number 3 prospect on this club, and he hasn't even played an inning yet for this team. And I just think that it's just something. I'm very, very fortunate to be able to, you know, it's right in the backyard here, be able to see them, you know, 60% of the time. I went up to Lynchburg to see them play up there. I mean, I saw Dane Dunning and Dylan Cease. Those guys are just pounding the strike zone, and it seems like they're having their way with hitters. And it's just been a pleasure to watch.
I look at the standings and I often wonder how they've lost.
Right.
You look and say, well, what's going on in these losses? And there are always pieces of a team that when they're young, they're going to struggle. I honestly do think that we could look back at this Winston-Salem Dash team and say, wow, how loaded were they, even in regard to the major league club? And what's funny about that is there's a chance that based on all of the quirks that come with a baseball season and the ups and downs, that the Dash could finish around 500.
Right.
That's what nonsense records can be minor league baseball season. So, I think it's great how many people are really delving into the depth of what a minor league season is there for, and it's not for the standings at all.
Two numbers here, and then I'll get to the final question. Dylan Cease's ERA right now, 1.95 with a whip.
That's good.
Yeah, with a whip of 1.14. And then before Dunning went up, his ERA was 2.5 and his whip was 0.95. So, man, those are all right, I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Not bad at all. Last thing, Jason, give me your favorite broadcasting moment.
Favorite broadcasting moment?
Yep.
By whom?
For you.
For me?
Yep. Your most, I don't know, it could be anything, anytime.
Geez. Anytime?
Yep.
So, I was at Boise State 2 years ago for a football game.
Okay.
And they were playing BYU. And BYU had fourth down and 19 from its own 15, let's say. It was fourth and long from inside their own red zone. Snap comes back, and darn if the punter doesn't start running it out of the end zone. And we're like, I mean, basically, if I could have said, what the? And we were on legitimate cable where I wouldn't have gotten fired, I'd have said that. It was the most ridiculous fake punt I've ever seen. And then our sideline reporter, Paul Carcaterra, at halftime, talked to the punter. And the punter basically said, yeah, I thought there was a chance that we might call a fake punt that day, but not on 4th and 100. And so I was like, what are they doing? And I guess they were trying to spring a trap in a big game, rivalry game, whatever it might be. I've not been that shocked, that level of surprised at a play call ever. So that is, for me, that's the most intriguing moment. I do love the fact that we had a couple of triple plays my first year with the Sox, and I will never forget that, especially the first one that started in right field and ended up with a tag of Prince Fielder between third and home. I mean, God love baseball for that sort of thing.
All right, Jason. I mean, we could talk about prospects and Sox all day, but I think this has been great. So thanks for your time today and your day off. You got the Cubs Sox series. I know for Sox fans, it's you circle that on the calendar every time the schedule comes out.
I'd circle it on mine, but mine only has the word Kopech on one date, and I'm not telling you.
And do you know what day that is?
Oh, yeah, I do. I just can't tell you.
Oh, okay, great. Well, all right.
That's what my answer is going to be from now on, is I know exactly the moment when it's happening, and I refuse to tell all of you.
Well, hopefully he has a good start tomorrow, and, you know, hopefully the Sox big league club gets things going here. Thanks for your time, Jason.
Glad to.
That's Jason Benetti, White Sox play-by-play announcer. Thanks to him for his time today on the Future Sox podcast. So there you have it. Hope you enjoyed these four interviews. Jason Benetti, Tyler Johnson, Tate Blackman, and Blake Battenfield. That's going to do it for the Future Sox podcast for this week. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Future Sox, Instagram, Future Sox. I am on Twitter at CDCole55, and I take a bunch of pictures. So the Instagram for that is at CDCole55 as well. I share all those pictures, as I mentioned, on the Future Sox Instagram. We'll be back next week with more. We'll talk to Matt Cassidy and hopefully have some more player interviews for you. So once again, thanks for listening to the Future Sox podcast. That's Sox Cubs series this weekend. You go Sox.